Chapter 28. They needed to have this out. Tia was in some sort of trouble, and Kip was going to make her tell him what it was. During a rest at practice, he told the squad a little about his adventure and almost the whole truth about what had happened to Gavin. There was a fight over a dagger. Grinwoodie tried to grab it, and I tangled with him. Andros joined in, and Gavin intervened. Everyone tangled up. My father diverted the blade into himself so I wouldn't get stabbed. More than a few puzzled glances at that. Why was it harder to tell a partial truth than a complete lie? Kip rushed on. But that wasn't the amazing thing. I jumped in after him. I lit some red to make a beacon, and when we got pulled out by this pirate, the dagger was a dagger no longer. It was a full-length sword with 7 jewels of each of the 7 primes in the blade, and when they pulled it out, Gavin was alive. He didn't even bleed. They asked him questions then, most of which he couldn't answer, and Cruxer swore them all to secrecy. Then, because their break had already extended for half an hour, he called it a day. Tia had slipped out of practice before he'd noticed, and he hadn't seen her at dinner, so now he was waiting up for her in their room. He'd been waiting half an hour, getting more and more cross, when he had a thought. He went to the tiny desk and found no papers. He hadn't noticed before, because they simply weren't there, his ownership papers of Tia that he'd already signed over. She'd taken them from his room, thinking him dead, and turned them in. Of course she had. He couldn't blame her for worrying that with him gone, anyone might take his signed transfer of title. That was why she wasn't here. No longer his slave, she'd moved into the barracks. Good for her. She owed him nothing, and the bond of master to slave, unwelcome though it had been, was gone. But maybe that had been the only bond they'd shared, and it felt like she'd given up on him. He'd wanted her to be free, but he'd still wanted her to owe him, to be eternally grateful, to be somehow therefore subordinate. He'd wanted her to be free, but he wanted to decide for her how she should use her freedom. Kip swore aloud and went to bed. The next morning he went to breakfast, then checked the lists. It wasn't on any work details. He supposed that meant he should go to class. Class. Ugh. He stood in front of the lift with all the other students and withdrew into himself, carrying his black little storm cloud around with him. Of course, there were 1,000 things Kip still needed to learn. He had some experiential knowledge, but almost no other kind. It would hamper him eventually, he knew. Hell, it already had. The extent of his knowledge was the bouncy green balls of doom. Well, practically. It wasn't going to be enough to keep him alive in the coming war. Plus, he'd managed to lose the knife that he was now more and more afraid was important. Andros Guile had called it the blinder's knife. It was only because he'd been vague with the squad about where it came from that they hadn't asked him more about it. He'd let them think that it was Gavin's. And how did my mother come by that? Anyway. Kip walked into Magister Kada's classroom. It was hard to believe that he'd first walked in here only a few months ago. He felt like he was 10 years older. He sat at the back of the room. Even in Discipulus's clothing again, he didn't think he'd be able to escape notice, but there was no reason to stick his thumb in Magister Kada's eye. More than he had to, anyway. A voice whispered in his ear.
I hear you connived your way into being declared legitimate, little bastard. Don't think it changes anything. I know what you are.
Kip turned. So nice to see you, Magister. He said it like he meant it. She gave him a nasty grin. Kip's training and fighting had changed him so much that perhaps he should have taken some solace in the fact that Magister Kada looked exactly the same. Shrunken like an old woman, despite only being in her early 30s, dishevelled with hair that hadn't seen a pick since the last time Kip had been in class, green spectacles on a gold chain around her neck.
Should I get my switch ready?
I don't know, Kip said. I'm just the ignoramus son of a whore. He winced. Kip the lip wasn't so far in the past, apparently.
Any more language like that, Kip Guile, and it'll be Knuckles. You remember, I believe,
Magister Kada said. Kip put his hands on the desk before him. The fingers of his left hand still bowed upward, stiff and stubborn, though he was working on them. The pain of getting that hand smashed with a switch would be excruciating. The whole hand still felt like one exposed nerve. He looked up at the Magister, puzzled. What? He was supposed to be afraid of getting his knuckles wrapped. Tia and Ben Haydad came in right before class was supposed to start. They saw Kip and mirrored each other's surprise at seeing him there, looked at each other, and then sat next to him. The Magister went to the front of the class, cleared her throat, and waited the moment it took for the class to fall silent.
Discipuli!
Magister, the class answered. Kip joined them. A new start, Kip.
Discipuli, today we're going to be discussing orange. Any orange drafters here today?
A few discipuli raised their hands. Kip debated raising his and raised a couple fingers.
Orange is singularly useless, Magister Kada said.
She grinned nastily.
You'll spend your lives making lubrication for machines and for storing away metals so they don't rust. It is, however, a relatively easy life. Your patron may have you draft barrels of the stuff each day, which may take you from sunrise to noon, and then to keep you from dying early, you'll be done by noon every day. Some will happily have other duties for you to perform, usually non-magical ones, cleaning stables, dusting furniture, mopping barracks.
Yes, Ben Haydad.
Orange can be used for more than that, Ben Haydad said. And with a war looming that could destroy all of us, I think we should start training oranges to live up to their full potential.
Their full potential? Magister Kada asked.
Her tone was meant to be a warning, but Ben Haydad seemed to think it was a real question.
Oranges can craft hexes. It's said that in Rue, orange spies infiltrating the city crafted fear hexes invisible to the naked eye, but so potent that people avoided whole neighborhoods, allowing the heretics to tunnel under the walls unopposed. Oranges can spike food and drink, fear casting, traumaturgy, pathomancy, will blunting.
Forbidden,
Magister Kada snapped, and at your level forbidden to even discuss.
We're at war, Ben Haydad said. I just heard that the last fort below Roic Neck fell. From there there's nothing to stop the Colour Prince until they reach the Iol River. Even if you won't teach the oranges to craft hexes, you should be teaching us all how to resist them, and certainly how to recognize them. This Colour Prince will doubtless be put down in weeks if he hasn't already been. None of you will have to face orange heretics.
There are people who have already faced the blood robes in this very room, Ben Haydad said.
Thanks, Ben.
I see. So you are friends now, is that it?
Magister Kada asked Ben Haydad, looking from him to Kip.
Trying to make the guile look good? Quite the pair you make, huh? The ignoramus and the boy who can't even read? How'd you learn all this?
I can read,
Ben Haydad hissed.
The words just get scrambled for him, is all, Magister, Tia said. He can read if he goes slow.
Slow is a nice way of saying stupid, Magister Kada said.
Kip sighed. It had the best intentions.
Ben Haydad, you think being friends with this lordling will help you?
Magister Kada asked. The whole class was silent, expectant.
I'm not his friend because he can do something for me, Ben Haydad said, and I resent your implication. You dishonor me, and you dishonor yourself by speaking such petty vileness.
A wave of shock passed through the young teens. They looked like they didn't want to look away for a heartbeat in case they missed Magister Kada's head exploding. Magister Kada's eyes widened, fists balled.
You think he can protect you? She demanded. Report yourself immediately, Ben Haydad, for expulsion.
There was a collective gasp.
Expulsion?
Ben Haydad asked, disbelieving.
For gross insubordination. I've not used my power to expel a discipulus in 3 years. Perhaps it is time. You're worthless as a drafter. You'll be useful as an example.
The old Kip would have jumped out of his seat and started shouting furiously. He would have tapped into the well of hatred at injustice that he'd carried since growing up with his addled mother. Growing up, it had never felt safe to be furious with her on his own behalf, but when he'd seen others suffering injustice, it had been there, hot and ready, a powerful insanity he could put on and only take off when he was exhausted. Kip had been going green golem since long before he could draft. Even Ram had feared him when he'd been like that. Kip stood slowly. Tyr tried to grab him, tried to keep him in his seat.
"What do you think you're doing, Kip Guile? You think I can't expel you too?"
Of course she couldn't. "You can't even expel Ben-Hadad," Kip said. He spoke evenly, respectfully, even mournfully. He didn't raise his voice, but he spoke loudly enough for all to hear. "He's a Blackguard inductee, and if you think Commander Ironfist is going to let you thin his already strained ranks in a time of war, I wish you luck in the conflagration that will be your own career." A profound silence fell over the room. The whispering teenagers weren't even whispering, and Kip's tone somehow defanged Magister Kada. Respectfully, regretfully, Kip continued. "Magister, you weren't always like this. You don't like children, I understand that. It's a failing. But all Orholam's sons and daughters have failings. You've been assigned by an angry superior, or perhaps through cruel chance, to do work that has never fit you. You've served quietly in a difficult position because you love Orholam and you love the Chromeria, and you love the Seven Satrapies. But you hate your work, and I bet that you hate what you've become. You're better than this. You've been punished for something, or perhaps for nothing, and you've done a lot of damage in turn, not least of all to yourself. I will do what I can to help you." Kip stepped into the aisle, and without waiting to see how the Magister would react, walked out of the classroom. He walked directly to the lift and headed to the top floor. He got off and checked in with the Blackguards. He recognized them. Bayan Yell, who had helped kill the Green God with Kip, and a curvy woman who he thought was named Essel. Tyr had liked her a lot. "I'd like to speak with the White if she has any time today," Kip said. "Please?" Bayan Yell said, "We can ask her between her other meetings to squeeze you in. It may be a few hours, though. If you're late to Blackguard training this afternoon, you'll bear the consequences." Kip shrugged. Consequences. He waited an hour before Bayan Yell gestured to him, letting him through. Kip headed to the White's room, past the Blackguards at the checkpoint and more outside her door. There had been an assassination attempt while Kip had been gone, filed by the Prism himself, they said. That meant more guards and more attentive ones. Kip was frisked twice. When he got into the White's office, he was surprised by how healthy she looked. She bade him come to stand in front of her desk, and for a long moment she studied him. She had secretaries and messenger slaves attending her while she saw to her daily business overseeing the Chromeria. Kip stood silent. He knew not to speak until spoken to.
"Do you know, I expected you to look more like Gavin. You look more like your grandfather and great-grandfather. Do you know, you are exactly what so many of the great families were hoping for, treating their sons and daughters like stallions and mares to be bred for this trait or that? The blood wars made people who should have known better act like animals themselves, I'm afraid."
"Hi, mistress."
"Your eyes blue to gather light efficiently, your skin dark to hide when you draft, a muscular frame for war, and of course, above all, always and forever, your ability to draft seven colours. It's not so simple, of course, to breed humans, and while some traits can be guessed with a fair degree of accuracy, we know not nearly the complexity of ourselves. I've never seen a child with blue eyes who didn't have at least two parents or grandparents with the same, but I've seen a girl darker than you who sprang from parents lighter than me. It almost got her mother killed by the father, jealous fool, who still suspected her patrimony until the girl was old enough he could see she had his nose and eyes both. The world is more marvellous than we know, Kip. But you're here for a reason. What would you have of me?"
"A favour," Kip said. "Actually, two."
"I gathered. It's rare that people come simply for my excellent company."
"I'm sorry. Have I done something to offend?"
"I don't know the protocol here," Kip said.
He still had a weight on his soul. She shook her head.
"Please, go on."
"There's a Magister named Kada. I think she's requested transfers to other duties, probably multiple times. Maybe long ago. She has since given up. I think her transfers were blocked by some enemy of hers. Would you grant her application?"
The White looked pensive. She lifted a hand and gave some rapid set of signals that a secretary understood. A slave quietly hurried out the door.
"An odd way to get rid of a Magister you don't like," the White said.
"It's not for me. It's for her. She's miserable.
and she's bad at her work because of it. I'll know the truth of it in an hour. I'll decide then. And the second thing? The White asked.
I want you to tell me about the Lightbringer, Kip wanted to say. I want you to tell me about the Blinder's Knife.
I need a tutor, he said instead. I don't mean to sound arrogant, but I have so much to learn. I'm a full-spectrum polychrome, and I can't sit in a class where I'm only hearing things that I already know, much less waste my time butting heads with a jealous magister.
You think I can find you a magister who isn't jealous? Of a full-spectrum polychrome son of a prism who's being given preferential treatment?
I was hoping you would do it, Kip said.
She laughed, truly surprised.
Oh, Kip, I'd forgotten how audacious the young can be.
I'm important, Kip said.
She liked that less. Her smile faded, died.
In a very narrow sense, is all I mean, he continued.
He struggled to find words.
My importance isn't... I shouldn't be given preference because of who I am. I'm important in that I have a vital function to perform.
And that is?
She asked, wary, perturbed.
I am to save my father, he wanted to say.
It was a good purpose. Maybe it was even the purpose to which Orholm had called him, but if he said that, he would be lying.
I don't know, he admitted. But the task is what's important. I am merely the tool by which it will be accomplished, and I ask you to prepare me for it. My audacity is to serve Orholm without fear, believing he will walk with me through fire.
He wanted to be that certain, thought that he should be that certain, so he didn't realize it was a lie until it was already out of his mouth.
Kip, we are all people of will here. Every man and every woman who wrestles light has tasted godhood. We are all important, or Orholm wouldn't have given us these tools, wouldn't have trusted us with these powers.
Like he trusted the Colour Prince.
The words were out of Kip's mouth before he could stop them.
I'm so sorry, High Lady.
He bowed his head.
Don't you see, Kip? The Colour Prince's insanity and grasping for godhood is no counter to what I said. Power is the ultimate test of a man. The more you're given, the more opportunities for corruption. That many fail the test doesn't mean Orholm is wrong. It means that men are free, and great souls succeed or fail spectacularly.
Like my father, Kip said.
Your father most of all.
She hesitated, then waved her secretaries back. They immediately got up and went to stand by the door. One pulled a curtain between them and Kip and the White. Only a blackguard remained, watching. And my grandfather, he should have said. It was a perfect segue to address what he had seen, but what did he have to tell her? Andros was a White, and then he wasn't? Oh, and I lied to you and the entire spectrum about what happened on the ship. Kip was pushing his luck as it was. He was like a novice Nine Kings player. On the boat, he'd prepared one move ahead, and the lies he had prepared had worked spectacularly with the spectrum, but now he was simply playing whatever card came into his hand. The lies made a lattice. The old moves constrained the new ones. How does Andros do it? Does he remember what lies he's told every player? Of course he does. That's what the guile memory is for him. Here Kip didn't even know who all the players were. The White liked him, but he didn't think she would find the lies of a 16-year-old amusing or masterful. She was old, and old people want to see young people as refreshingly direct, simple, sweet, and innocent. He might be holding exactly the card she needed to play against Andros, for theirs was a game going on decades, but Kip couldn't give it to her. Perhaps in this great game there is no giving of cards, only trades. The White rummaged in her desk. She pulled out a small framed picture.
When I die, Kip, I want you to have this. And after you've used it, if he still lives, I want you to give it to Gavin.
She turned it around, and Kip saw that it was one of the new Nine Kings cards.
This is the work of a dear old friend of mine.
Janice Borick, Kip said.
He recognized the handiwork. He took the framed card from the White. It was called The Unbreakable. It was beautiful. Janice Borick had clearly lavished attention and time on this work. Where some of the cards were the product of haste and compulsion, Though all showed her total mastery of her art, this card was as intricately painted as any Kip had seen. A young woman with fiery hair stood on a hill dominated by an oak, the smoking ruins of an estate to her left. To her right was an abyss. Tiny flecks of blue and green touched her grey eyes. Tears stood on each cheek, but her jaw was set, eyes fixed on some point in the distance.
"I just buried my youngest daughter," the white said. "Calling me the unbreakable has felt sometimes like a cruel joke, and other times a promise. I chose to live, to fight, even when fighting meant to fight despair and the taunts of meaninglessness that is the abyss.
This card is not all pleasantness, but I should like to be understood some day."
"Damn, you were beautiful. And fierce. And I can't believe I just said that out loud," Kip said. He'd slipped up in recognizing the art. If he pretended to slip up in another direction, he might be able to distract her before she demanded to know how he knew Janice Borig's work. The white laughed.
"Well, thank you. I think perhaps Janice was being kind."
"Janice isn't kind. She's honest," Kip said. "That's what a mirror does."
"Shit. Can't hold a thought in your head for 6 seconds, can you, Kip?"
"Don't feel bad," the white said. "I know an artful dodge when I hear one, and I've dealt with your father and grandfather for far too long to underestimate you, Kip, even if you are young. You send satraps out of here crying, don't you?"
"It's happened," she said dryly.
"Janice," she said.
So Kip told her about his meetings with Janice Borig. He told her that the woman had been working on his card. He told her about the assassins with the shimmer cloaks. He told her about Janice Borig dying in his arms. He could see it was a blow to the white.
"Kip, this is vital. Did you save anything from the fire?"
Kip had been bracing himself for that question for the entire conversation.
"She wanted me to grab something, but the fire was so intense, and there were piles of gunpowder everywhere. I was only able to grab the shimmer cloaks."
The white studied his face.
"You're a good liar, Kip, but I've dealt with the best. The shimmer cloaks are good for killing people, but the cards are good for 1,000 purposes. Janice wouldn't have let you dawdle grabbing weapons while letting the truth burn. It was her whole life's work."
"She wasn't conscious," Kip said,
not willing to let a good lie die.
"I thought we were going to go with refreshingly direct, damn it."
The white sighed.
"I won't ask more. I hope you've put them in a safe place. Don't check on them often, else spies may find them by luck. Beware of using them alone. I don't know what all the new cards are, but I can imagine some of the events of recent history would flay your mind."
With his own hand so recently burnt clean of skin, it was a metaphor with some resonance for Kip. Kip moved to speak, but realized that correcting her to say that he didn't actually know where the cards were would be to admit he had been lying. Every way he moved, she gained something.
"How come when you do this to me I don't hate you?" Kip asked.
"Box you in, you mean?"
"Yes,
unlike when Andros does it," she said.
"Yes," emphatically.
"Because you can tell I love you and want the best for you."
"Love me?" Kip scoffed.
"You barely know me. When you have lived either a very short time or a very long time, if you've lived well, you will be able to love easily too. Broken hearts have fresh places to bond with new faces."
Kip wasn't sure how to take that, wasn't sure he could believe it. He said,
"You had other daughters. I mean, other than the one... sorry.
Had, yes. Grandchildren, too.
Had."
She stared at him for a while, inscrutable. She put away the framed card. For a moment, Kip wondered if she'd forgotten what he'd come here asking. Then he saw a twitch of amusement in her eyes. She could tell he was wondering if she was old and senile, and she was letting him wonder. It was a game to her. And this woman was preparing for the death of old age? She was brighter than the rest of the spectrum combined. Kip waited.
I'm too busy to teach you myself, though you intrigue me, little Guile. I do hope you make it to full flower. You are a boy with such potential.
She closed her eyes for a moment, upbraiding herself.
Your pardon. A young man. I'm afraid that all men under 40 are boys to me now. No, I can't teach you. I will look into the matter of this magister, though. And you do need a tutor. This much is plain. You will continue with those classes she cannot teach, but in all she can, Lady Guile will be your tutor.
Lady Guile? Hadn't Felia Guile joined the freeing in Garriston? Kip wondered about that sometimes. She'd been in Garriston at the same time he had, and she'd never even asked to see him, her only grandson. Maybe a bastard was too shameful.
Oh, you mean Carys?
Hmm, the White said, with a little smirk.
That's great, Kip said,
even if he was a little scared of her. She clearly knew everything, and she had his total respect.
Attend your lectures, your other lectures, as usual, until I can speak to her. She may need some convincing.
The White's smirk faded.
Kip, Orholam walks men through fires every day. I believe that. But before you walk through fire, make certain it's one he's asked you to walk through.